Welcome to the committee meeting today on the Senate Revenue Committee. Today we have three bills on our agenda, Senate Bill 61, Senate Bill 252, and Senate Bill 509. Colleagues, as you remember, we left off in a public hearing on Senate Bill 61. When the committee decided it would await a report that was coming from folks that were meeting on their consideration of adjustments to school funding formulas. And that group has met. I believe they have recommendations to bring forward. So we'll begin by opening up the public hearing on Senate Bill 61. And do we have the folks signed up for the testimony on Senate Bill 61, or do I see Mr. Rose and Mr. Marshall in the audience? Mr. Marshall gesticulating while
I see the coalition is just falling apart. Gee, I mean, we thought the fix was in.
Colleagues, we ended with a work session, so this is invited testimony, and we invite Mr. Rose to come forward. Good morning, Mr. Rose.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members of committee, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose, the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and I want Mr. Marshall's
reticency.
Physical response to be noted that it's because he's absolutely agreement with everything I say.
Let the record show that Mr. Marshall is head bobbing vigorously from the background.
Looks like one of those dolls in the back of a Chevy, Mr. Chair.
And let the record also show that the head bobbing is in the affirmative motion. Mr. Rose, you have not only the floor, but apparently a proxy vote this morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have a small handout there. There's a green page and a yellow page and then some white paper. And as the chair noted, the School Funding Coalition Steering Committee, and that's the group of 42 superintendents across the state, met on March 16th, and they met for 5 hours. And I want to reiterate what I told you last time I was here. The first hour discussion was much like the hour discussion you had their last meeting. Each of them pointing out the problems they have in their own particular situation and so forth. And then they got on with what do you do about these issues. They considered making no changes in the formula. They considered increasing support for small schools, increasing support for the facilities fund. As you know, in the current budget, there's $17.5 million for the facilities fund, and that's distributed on a prorated basis, a percentage of the cost of the construction of a classroom that opens up during the school year. The $17.5 million is the same amount that was in the budget last biennium, and it's aimed at 8%. You're allowed to get 8% of the cost of opening that building, excluding the land cost. Last biennium, that $17.5 million instead of 8% was prorated, I think about 5.6 in that neighborhood. We've done some work, and it would take $49 million instead of $17.5 million, according to the data we have in from districts, to fully fund the 8%. So one of the options was to increase somewhere there. They also discussed the declining enrollment issues, and you've seen the bill and the run and what that does. They also discussed the special education situation, the cap increase issue, plus the total special ed issue, the increased in the autism questions, the increased in the high-cost kids over the past decade, and what are we going to do about that. Their recommendations after that discussion is what you find on the green sheet. And before I talk about those, I want to note that most, if not all, school districts believe they will have some level of program reduction or adjustment or limitation with the current dollars being projected for schools and the formula as currently stands. For most districts, the current formula and the level of dollars, the amount of money they have for revenue coming in next year versus this year is running 2.5% to 3.7% increase. And by the time they face the increased energy, increased insurance, increased salaries, et cetera, most of them believe they will have some reductions to make.
Mr. Chair.
Question.
Just to be real clear, so the 5.2, if we didn't do anything with the formula and we just looked at the 5.2, not discussing where the 5.2 came from, which is still a bone of contention, at 5.2, most of the school districts are going to suffer.
Most of the school districts will have increased revenue, but they'll not have increased revenue that will allow them not to make some program adjustments, et cetera.
Okay.
Part that it has to do with what was in the formula, what was in 622, what was in the lottery bond, et cetera. And all I want to get on the table is that the issue of change in the formula causes difficulties for everybody.
Right. No, I just wanted to get it.
Not districts, not Eugene, all districts have some difficulty with that. And that goes into the discussion when you try to make some decisions.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Minnesota.
Again, would you go over those cost drivers?
Energy salaries, energy costs, medical costs. Those are the three big ones.
So salaries, energy, and medical inflation.
And the energy issue, I don't know if you, I'm sure you're involved in it somewhere in these, I don't know which committees you're on, but they're being told by different providers to look at 40 and 50, 60% increases in energy costs.
Yeah.
And so, bang, that's a hit. Medical insurances are up 12, 15, 18%. And I'm not whining about that stuff. I'm trying to put in perspective why changing the formula, why that gets into that discussion. I had runs for them to show what if we put another $8 million into the $17.5 million for facilities, what if you put more into it, et cetera. I had runs that showed what if you rolled forward the small school, this, and a variety of different things. And they, at one point, one of them said, we need to quit looking at these runs and try to talk about these issues in terms of what short-term and long-term things can we do that will help the total problem, not just the run versus our particular situation. That's very difficult to do when you're facing your impact. The one superintendent, when they asked for a vote, and it was Senator Castillo's superintendent, they asked him if he would support this, and he said, I don't know yet. I want to see what else you're going to do, because everything we do cost Eugene money in all of these different ideas because they're that average district that we've talked about before. These recommendations do not solve all districts' problems or all the funding issues. They don't make small schools well. They don't satisfy anybody in total. But I do believe they are rational recommendations in terms of what can you get done now and what kind of things can you do to help plan for the next session. And so with that, the green sheet, the first recommendation is leave the formula alone, essentially. And then specific things related to small schools, special ed, and the ESDs. And these are our recommendations, although I do want to share with you, the chair admonished me that you didn't ask me for our opinions on the ESD. So whether that's relevant to this discussion or not, I don't know. But this is what we did. The small schools, as you know, there is a phased-in increase in small school funding related to high school. And that moves about $4.5 million more dollars into the small school side of the formula this biennium. And we're proposing that in addition to that, you establish a small district supplement fund of a like amount, $4.5 million each year or $9 million total. That would be a total of $18 million moved from the current biennium for the small school side in the discussion. We worked on it a variety of ways, and one of the problems my earlier remarks that every district has some degree of difficulty. But I do believe that they came down on the side. There is considerable support for the concern that your small schools, a lot of them, the question isn't financial difficulty. The question is now, do they have an adequate program? Can those kids get the bare what they need? And facilities issue is an important issue, and declining enrollment in bigger districts is an important issue, et cetera. But in most cases, we have to readjust programs we got, and they're not quite what we wanted, et cetera. But in a lot of the small school situations, the concern is there are absolutely not adequate programs in some of those small schools. But again, there isn't very good data to say, in Iona, it's this way, they don't have it, and St. Paul does have it. And you hear each of them talk, you get one set of ideas, and they wind up contrasting themselves to others always to advantage themselves, and so that there's underlying belief that there's a problem that needs to be fixed, but there isn't a real good handle on how to do it across the board in one change of the formula. And so we're suggesting that you set up the fund and that you also direct the Department of Education, who now with the database has the ability to do a lot of study of how of the relationship between program cost and size, until we get a real floor of what it takes to be sure that every kid has an adequate program in every school. So those two things come together. On a yellow sheet, I'll go over that in a little more detail. But the point I want to make at this point is that the group of superintendents, after having considered all their own issues, the one thing they do agree on is that the issue of an adequate program in every small school is a very significant issue, and we ought to try to get a handle on it. On the special ed situation, and I mentioned this before, but we believe that the issue of whether the double count and is the right way to go, whether we don't believe we're adequately funding a high-cost, low-incident. There are lots of different funding streams. There's regional programs. There's federal monies. There's local monies going into the special ed situation. The rapid growth of kids with more significant needs in this decade, the issue of where the autistic issue has taken us, there are huge financial issues inside the special ed. And we believe that you should take time out, take the money out of the state school fund to fund it, and fund a really good analysis, set up a task force in this interim so we have better answers for that in the next biennium. And related to that, I just learned this past week that the Oregon Business Association and Representative Backlund have a bill on the House side to set up such a task force. We were aiming at doing it through the department and school people, but I think what they have in mind has merit in that we'll bring a mix of the community, the legislators, and the special ed folks together, and let's get a real handle on what it's costing us, how we best serve these kids, how much of what it costs us is education money, how much is other monies, and I commend that to you as an important step. On the ESD side, we're suggesting that you stay with the original recommendation from the ESD task force. Now, more specifically to what you might do with a small school district supplement fund on the yellow sheet and then the white numbers that go with it. And I, by the way, I don't have a law degree, and I don't write language very well, so I have not written any language how to do this, and I assume that if you decide you want to do some of this, it's easy to do. But you transferred $9 million. I don't know if you have to transfer it anywhere, but
it's true.
Yes.
So, Ozzie, before you start this discussion, Mr. Chair, I have one clarification. We're under a work session in Senate Bill 61, and, I mean, it's understood that I was just looking at this, trying to figure out where I'm going to file the rest of my paperwork, and this was the extended ADMW, the extended time. And back to your original recommendation, it's to leave the formula alone.
Correct.
So Senate Bill 61, from your recommendations, would not exist.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I that part's true, but I think Senate Bill 61 is relating to school financing. You could get in stuff and do all this stuff.
No, I'm fine. I was just trying to put it in context.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Senator Corcoran, the issue was to array all of the bills relating to school funding formulas. And it really doesn't matter, in my opinion, what bill we hear this issue on, as long as the relating clause is correct. This relates to school financing. And so we will, in fact, be considering an outlining an option, which we probably won't be able to take action on today, since it will require a considerable amount of drafting time to get where we need to be. But that's why we're using this vehicle.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Just for the record, for explanation.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you did that.
Thank you.
Okay, the concept of the Small District Supplement Fund is to assign $9 million to it, and that it would be available to districts who have high schools of fewer than 350 students in grades 9 through 12 or 267 in grades 10 through 12. And that's the same language that we used when we did the high school adjustment last time. Mr. Meyer pointed out that we also need to pay attention. We'd have to exclude, as we did last time, the various alternative schools and so forth. This is meant for the regular high school, so we're going to use that same concept that we had last time. And under our proposal, each qualifying district would receive a grant of $200 per student attending their high school. And that eats up about $3 million of the $4.5 million each year. And that leaves one-third of the fund, or $1.5 million, that would just be distributed on a needs grant basis and approach it like the 11% cap committee that looks at the data on their special ed for people who have more than 11% and make some decisions about which districts would get the money. And the criteria for determining that need would include but not be limited to district size, declining enrollment, staffing ratios, ending fund balances, and ESD resources available. And not more than $1.5 million would be distributed through this process. And our thinking is that this would be sunsetted after 2 years. This is an interim step to see that every district, small district, at least has an adequate program this next 2 years, and that a thorough study of the concept of a floor for all small school districts be developed and be available in the next session. 100 districts would qualify under this proposal of those size high schools. 61 of those districts also received dollars from the existing small high school arrangements. And you really have two approaches. You could put all the $4.5 million out on a per student basis or some kind of a grant basis. You could split it, as we're suggesting, some of it that way so everybody gets something, and then leave enough so that you could really focus on the needs of some of the districts. Or you could put all of it out on a need basis. The white sheet.
Can I interrupt you there for a minute, Mr. Rose? The mechanisms are not troublesome. I think there needs to be some mechanism, but the thing that needs to be injected here, I think, is it your intention to work out that kind of a formula and that kind of a board constituents and construction and process before this bill reaches the governor's desk? That is to say, between the House and the Senate, are these going to be known? Because I think the problem that I see here is it's not that the process is cumbersome and we have done this kind of thing before, but what I want to be able to deliver to people is some sense of certainty that at the other end of this legislative process, they can see how the program fits their need and they can see what the access path is to that program.
Mr. Chair, what I was hopeful or had in mind is that if we could put in statute enough things like the criteria I listed four and said not, that we at least get that on the table, and that by the time we get to the House, we would have enough details so everybody would know. The other issue, we've got to move fast enough. The districts need to know by July at latest how much is on the table, because they got to build budgets for next year. And so the concept of part of it going out on a per student basis, they would get a little bit of a handle on it. I know I got that much coming. And two, there's another $1.5 million, and how I do versus other schools with similar problems, I would get a portion or not get a portion of that, and here are the rules. And it's got to be relatively simple, and it's got to be relatively quick to be useful to them. But I think we can do that, but I thought you would at least want some of the criteria in writing before it got out of this committee.
And Mr. Rose, I think you've perceived the concern that I have, and that is that it really will not be helpful to people if they have another process that is indeterminate
in
time scope or in product for that school's needs. So the determinations need to be spelled out as much as we possibly could do it. The other thing is, how do we put a time limit on the consideration of a committee? You know, that they will have their deliberations done before the end of July, say, or what do you envision the end point for the deliberations that lead to those determinations?
Mr. Chair, I've had brief discussions with the State Department people who deal with this, and with the argument that we needed to have it all ironed out before it got through the House. Mm-hmm. And we got 3 weeks after. If you people buy into this, then we got about 3 weeks left to get it done. Mm-hmm. And I believe we have to answer all your questions at that time. I put this out on an email to all our soups last week before I left for the San Antonio watch the basketball game.
Thanks a lot for throwing that in, Ozzie.
You have a habit of throwing bricks and leaving town, don't you?
Well, anyway, I got 10 responses about this and 5 about what an SLB I was for going to the basketball tournament. But
can we return to the character reference part of this?
All of them ask the questions you're asking, sure. From the small people. How soon will I know? I've had 3 phone calls yesterday. Sure. How much will I get and how soon do I know? Here's my problem. And so the answer is language that lays out some of the criteria right now, all the details before it's through the House, which is, I assume, by the time you pass it out of here, it's about 3 weeks or maybe 4 weeks.
Questions from the committee? Mr. Vice Chair?
Well, Ozzie, this is effectively with the change that's already in the formula, that shift, and this proposal will be moving about $18 million more within the 5.2, two small high schools.
More than was available in the last biennium, yes. 9 of it, and Mr. Senator Corcoran cautions me on being honest. I see it as 18
That's
million.
Never been a problem for you, Ozzie.
$18 million more dollars in the small school side of our discussion. 9 of it's going there because of the existing law. 9 more is going because right. of the purpose or the proposal we're making. I just want to tell you a little bit about this, and then...
That's my comments will be after that, yeah. Ozzie the magician.
When I first talked with the State Department, we looked at trying to connect the proposal to the quality education model in some connection. And I gave them instructions. We needed to be able to spend about $4.5 million. We do believe there's a difference in the size of the school. And so let's break off grants for those with 50 or fewer kids in their high school, 50 to 150 and so forth. And so they did that for us. And they built a base grant that would be required to fund the small schools at the providing everything that's in the QEM. Now keep in mind, the QEM, we're not providing that for anybody. We're $900 million short, okay? But assuming we were, their work determined that for those smaller schools, the base grant required was about $92,000. And that's the group of 50 or below. And then you would ratchet that up appropriately. That ate up a lot of money. So they scaled it down to fit within our $4.5 million constraint, and that creates a $20,000 grant for the schools under 51, and then you can see the size of the grants as you go up. That would be one approach. The problem with that is the kind of cliff. If you had 50 kids versus 51, it's a big difference. And so we came back with, let's do a portion of the money. It also eats up all the money. Mm-hmm. Let's do a portion of the money straight across the board on a per-student basis in those high schools, and that's in the far column. And again, the constraint was I want to use about $3 million of it because I want to save the other $1.5 million to focus on where we can see that a school to operate next year and so forth needs to have additional help. And so that's how these numbers came about. And you can argue about the numbers, obviously, for 100 years. But that's the rationale behind the numbers. And with that, I'm just pleased to have any
questions. Questions?
Mr. Chair, I guess I just need to be clear again, Ozzie. When I was looking at it and wasn't listening totally, you said that the 3 columns then on the right-hand side, they wouldn't total 4.5, they would be 3?
Excuse me, the last column on the right totals 3. The third column from the right totals 4.5. That's if you put it all out in that grant proposal. It's one of the original ideas. But if you go to the $200 per student, which is the far right column, that totals $3,100,000.
And the other two are the full...
That's just a different way to do it, yes, sir. And it uses the entire $4.5 million.
The other two use the entire $4.5 million.
Right. And excuse me, the middle column, their grant per student, that just converts the $20,000 grant for monument to a grant per student.
Okay.
And those are essentially the same data, just one on total dollars and one on.
So, Mr. Chair, I just want to continue this for a second. So, you didn't do a run showing what the 4.5, there's no correlation then to the $200 per student, because you only, that only adds up to 3.1
right.
million a year. The other one adds up to 4.5 million right. a year.
And what?
So we could just do the, extrapolate what the, at the $200 per student, I mean, I guess that's still, I'm still trying to figure out how to do, even though the, your recommendations basically don't do anything, in essence, for the high growth areas, is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. But they also were involved in these meetings, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Why didn't, I'm just curious why.
Why we didn't is, you do this, I guess I didn't make myself clear in the start, that they looked at all these different ideas, and for each one of them, one of those ideas is better than the others. But at one point, one of them said, we got to quit looking at the runs and talk about the policy of, and there is overwhelming support for the concept that there are small schools that don't have adequate programs. And if we shift the money to $9 million or whatever you want to call it and do this, and then we turn around and take $8 million out of the 5.2 and set it aside for the facilities fund, then all these districts have just got the $9 million, turn around and lose it.
Right.
Because they're not, I mean, that's the problem with the changes. And right. so they came down on the side. This is a change that they feel needs to be made in the interest of all kids. It isn't in the interest of their kids in some cases. And they had I was doing my own clerical work, and you can't copy this color paper very good, but this shade shows the 17.5 million, 25 million, and who loses and who gains on that stuff. And my co-chair is from North Clackamas, leaving the, and we didn't even talk about using the facilities at $49 million. I thought that was way off the chart. But we did talk about what if you change it to 25.5, and North Clackamas would pick up $600,000 if you'd put, move the facility fund up to 25.5 instead of 17.5. But his argument is, but I believe that the issue for all kids in Oregon that we can address, ought to address this time, is the small school stuff, and that's it. But the other thing you need to keep in mind, another way to look at this, the changes. Everything we do, for example, 10% of what you move money around takes it out of Portland School District. And Portland's losing their some of their one-time monies. They're struggling with $14 to $20 million in next year's budget. And so every move we make, 10% of what we do is compounding their problem. Eugene, remember I talked about the middle districts, kind of like the average kids in our schools, that we pay a lot of attention resource-wise to the extremes, and the average people are the ones that don't get a lot of attention. Same thing here, the average meaning those that don't get affected by any one of the changes.
That's true. Just continuing. One more question. But, Ozzy, you know, I've been chewing on this, and I understand the winner and loser, taking the $29 million aside, I understand the winner and loser argument in terms of extending the years for ADMW, you know, doing the other, the transportation, whatever the other four were that we looked at. But if you take the, if you looked at the $29 million for what I think it was really intended for, which was a supplement, that argument doesn't really hold true. It's just that you would have to take the $29 million out of the 5.2 and find another $29 million to put in the 5.2, and then that 29 truly would be a supplement.
Senator Corcoran, I appreciate your question, and I've wrestled with that issue as well. But let me ask you to forbear for a moment on that question. And the reason I do that is this. What we're talking about is the formula. And I have heard, as you have heard, that 5.2 is the number. And it could be 5.1. It could be 5.228. And regardless of what that becomes, and there's lots of folks with opinions, some would gladly see that number lower. Some would gladly see that number higher than 5.2 billion. But regardless of that number, I think what we're trying to get to here is how do we put that number through the Senate into the other end.
Right.
But you and I, you know, we, I'm sure we have strong opinions about that timber money. I just don't think that is an argument that needs to come into this argument now. And the question before us is, what do we do with this form?
Right, and that's fine. And I just wanted to put that on the table. But it sort of anticipates the question that I would have for Steve, which is, will Steve then do, I assume he's already doing it, a run that reflects this change so that in the same fashion that you do the other runs, so that 4J and Portland can look at themselves alongside of these 100 school districts that would qualify?
Yes, I'll try to do that.
Okay, great.
But next, I think, you know, we can sort of cut to the chase on that. If just, you know, in consideration of these issues, we looked at $28 million at $6 per capita. You know, we're talking here about a third of that amount, roughly, in the form of $4.5 million a year for 2 years.
I thought it was $24.
Yeah.
On this. $24.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a ratio that we've already established.
Right.
You can kind of noodle your way through to, you know, what it is on a per capita basis.
Yeah, that's what. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Curry. Actually, you divide $4.5 million by 643,000, and it's about $7 or something. I mean, it's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, $7.
Yeah. But the point I wanted to make to Senator Corcoran's, I tried really hard not to use winners and losers in this presentation. I slipped when I talked about North Clackamas losing. I think that's the first time I used it.
No, and but we've had that.
I know that. But what I wanted to say about the discussion that our soups had, at the point they said, we got to quit talking about looking at the formula and the winner-loser concept, and are there any policy things that we ought to be talking about for all kids? And that led to this we ought to do. We know it cost Portland, the Portland lobbies in the back, and she cussed to me this last week, what's in this for Portland? And I said, what's in it for Portland is that we didn't move $8 million more for facilities. They'd lost another, if they want to look at the winner-loser concept. And as long as you're shifting money around, it affects everybody. And is there a legitimate reason to shift some? Our troops came back and said this. They believe this. Now, obviously, you guys and folks have to decide what you believe.
Senator Barr and then Senator Miss.
Ozzy, I guess two questions. One, the formula that you're proposing focuses on small high schools, not necessarily small districts. Small high schools in small districts.
Yes.
Do we need to worry about or whether that money actually gets to the high school as opposed to some of the elementary schools? Second question is, a lot of the people that came and testified over the first couple of months were speaking more, frankly, towards small elementary districts that were maybe a half a mile from another district. And this, I don't believe this necessarily gets at that, although it may get at it because you're putting the money into their high school.
Ms. Chair. Senator Beyer, those weren't small elementary districts. They were districts with small elementary schools in them.
Mm-hmm.
And this focuses on small districts defined as those having a high school smaller than 350. And it's 100, it's half our district. And it does not address the problem that a district has deciding on what school to fund or keep open or any of those kinds of things. Those are, and it's the same way the declining enrollment question. Declining enrollment is a serious problem in some schools, large and small, in school districts, large and small. But school districts are going to have to make decisions and live with that issue, those issues. They've got to make a decision, in our view. And so we have tried to, we said this is a small district supplement, not a small school supplement. Now, we've used the high school as a way to distribute the money, but we're not going to tell them how to spend the money when it gets there.
But that is your argument for why they need more money, is to enable them for the high schools to have an adequate program.
Right. And it's easier to make adjustments within the elementary schools and one of the problems you get into is some districts have already made adjustments, and you try to correct or fix those. That's one of the reasons we're saying there needs to be a portion of this fund ought to be people actually look at it, come in, show all their cards. One of the people that's fussing a lot about the condition of their high school acknowledges that they've underfunded deliberately their high school program to beef up their elementary program, and it's a very good elementary program, And you're going to have to see all those cards when you try to make some decisions. But I don't think you can, through a formula, make them for everybody. We still have this hope that we retain local school district boards and decision-making to some degree.
Senator Mayne?
At some point, it's kind of correct area for the chair. At some point, I'd like to have, before we start actually getting into making decisions, some presentation or discussion about Eugene School District in Portland, kind of what's going on in those areas, because I'm having a real hard time being sympathetic to the Portland public school system when I read some narratives in the newspaper. But I know that that may not necessarily reflect what's going on there. So when we start talking about school districts that have declining enrollments, what I'd like to, I guess, understand more is a little bit more about the dynamic and the burdens that they're suffering, because I know there are certain characteristics and things that are, and it's related to all of this, because I want to know ultimately whether we should shift some of these dollars that have been going to Portland for special purposes, whether we should shift some of those dollars or more dollars to the small schools. I guess I want to get into that discussion as opposed to just dealing with this in the abstract or as some kind of mathematical formula. I'd like to know a little bit more about the dynamics between these school districts that are in major metropolitan areas, because when we're looking at the redistricting, the census data, I'm seeing the inner city of Portland changing very dramatically and representing a district in the East Multnomah County area, we're growing dramatically. And so when you start talking about distributing the resources to the school districts, I just wonder, how long you can perpetuate holding up a district that, again, had 80,000 students at one point and now has 47,000. The demographics are showing that it's going down. So I guess in one sense, I want to know what the school district is going to do or what they're doing about that. What can they do about that? And they may not be able to do much with some of it, but I'd like to at least have that discussion. A presentation at some point.
Actually, Senator Miss, I think I can tell you how not to get there. And how not to get there is to ask folks to consider the implications on public policy before they conclude how the formula should be distributed. Because what we do, in fact, is consider that implication in our committee. When you talk about a community that has a declining enrollment, or a metropolitan area that sees the population bubble expanding outward, from the middle and leaving a lower population curve in the center of the city, or you see the inevitable maturation of a community as it grows outward and the new constructions at the edges, and the population, the new population and the new wealth is pulled to the edges of the community, That creates a whole different set of dynamics, but you're not going to get there by asking school activists and parents to come and talk about that issue.
Because I want the certified smart budget people.
I agree, and so what I think is what we do in the revenue committee when we talk about the public policy issues is we activate those constituents to come fight for their interests. What we really need to do, and I believe this is exactly on point on your question, is ask the Portland State University Center for Population Studies and other certifiably smart people, economists and demographers, to come and show us what the demographics of the metropolitan area look like today and what they're going to look like in 20 years. Show us what the population curves are. We know the metro areas are growing, but they're not growing equally, and they are growing outward from the center. Show us where the shifts are and show us where the projected shifts are. And at that point, I think the public policy implications are for us to conclude. But facts is facts, and the bottom line is that we keep dealing with the emotions of the issue, not the facts of the issue. So what I'm going to suggest to you is that we can do that. We can do that in this committee, or we can do that in the education committee. But it is a policy implication that I think cuts across all of these issues. The point is we don't want to pit constituents against each other. But we can't afford to ignore what the facts of the demographic movements and shifts are in our community.
All I'm trying to do is really find out what those dynamics are in terms of decision making, because I can argue in favor of Ozzie's plan and say, yeah, we ought to do this because, but then there may be equally compelling reasons to do something else in the inner city.
And I think there may be.
I don't know what that is in terms of...
Well, let me try to ask, first let me ask the committee if there's any other questions for Mr. Rose, and then I'm going to try to offer a summary of what I've heard this morning.
I would like to ask Ozzie if he could follow up on this, because I think the other dynamic, I mean, I think what you're raising is really good for us to focus on. And then there's also another part of the picture, and that is when there is declining enrollment and shifts in population, how districts are able or unable to respond to that, because it's not like if you have a drop in population, all the third graders at one school disappeared. You know, the population is varied in terms of where it happens and how it happens and how the money follows, how we fund schools and how all of those dynamics play out in a school budget. And so I guess, I don't know if you want to speak to that at this point, Ozzie, but I think there is that, yes, but, you know, we can look at the numbers and how it's shifting, and then the other part of it, so how does that actually work as a district's trying to, you know, figure out its budget and...
No, he doesn't want to address that.
I do want to make one comment, though.
After the chairman.
Okay.
Now, Senator Chastia, I think what you're referring to is called resilience. And what that means to me is that in some communities, there are alternatives. And in other communities, they don't have the resilience to have alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it relates to the size of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it relates to the way the community is configured, not necessarily size, but where the growth occurs and where
mm-hmm.
it's moving from.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it has something to do with time and distance from other viable alternatives. So I guess I would say that, you know, that kind of goes hand in hand with once you've decided what the trend is, what's the capacity of the community to respond to the trend? And then what's our obligation to consider, you know, what we should do to make those equities balance or, as Ozzie has suggested, maybe recognize that as long as we have the control of the school district administration in the hands of elected public officials at the local level, they're going to have to bite the bullet and make the tough choices community by community rather than kicking it up to the state to do it on a, you know, superannuated statewide school board level, which, you know, I don't think anybody's comfortable with that role.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly wouldn't want to be the one to tell Eugene what schools it has to
mm-hmm.
keep open and what schools it might want to consider for closure,
mm-hmm.
although we have done exactly that in this legislative process,
but
not this session, but in earlier sessions.
If I could, Mr. Chair, I would just like to also add that, you know, as we do this, we also need to try to focus on, you know, the whole goal here is helping, is being focused on the student. And so what does it mean to a student in a school district when there is declining enrollment, and how does that affect their school or their class size or the programs or all of those things? I guess it really comes down to, we can take a look at the numbers in population, we can take a look at the demographics and how we fund schools, but it all comes back to, so how does it affect those students in those classrooms, in their programs, and in making the decisions that we make about, you know, where we're going to shift the money around. And so I just hope that we stay focused on that as well.
Senator Chastia, I think that's really important. I guess the issue that informs me the most about what you're discussing is the question of equity based on services, not on ADMW. And that's one that I think we're working with the ESD question. Mr. Rose, you had a response to the senator, and I didn't want to cut that off.
Actually, Mr. Chair, it's a response to Senator Minnis.
Okay.
This plan is a plan of out of discussion of 40 school superintendents, not Ozzie's plan. I just want to be sure that I'm presenting what a group of superintendents say we ought to do, not just a subtle difference there.
Senator Minnis, any response?
Stand corrected.
Senator Barr, you were in queue, and then Senator Perkins.
Just thinking about this, I'm actually feeling fairly positive about the 40 superintendent plan as he's presented. I mean, the reality is that this legislature can never replace the local school boards, and we never can make those by school decisions. We'll never be able to do that very good, and we probably don't want to be back on those school boards very much, but there are some sparks of brilliance in this. I mean, one of the realities is locationally in my community, in either Springfield or Eugene, we have a number of high schools, and we can have a number of offerings and we can provide students within those districts the choice of going to an industrial arts program at North Eugene High School or a language program at South Eugene High School, we can work that out. But if you're in Fossil, there's only Fossil High School. I think there's only Fossil High School. And that does argue for, I mean, there, you will never get the same rich package of offerings at the small high school that you can get in an urbanized area. You just can't do it financially. You can't make that work. And you probably, there are other trade-offs in a small school that you wouldn't get in a 2,500-student school in Beaverton, West Beaverton. And that's just reality. And to some extent, families are going to make those choices with their feet where they're going to live. But the best we're probably going to do is get a reasonable amount of money, which I still think overall our budget is less than it needs to be. But the way this is proposed, it probably is close to as good as we're going to do as we can get this time.
Senator Byer. Oh, excuse me, Senator Mills.
Just a couple of things. One is that Senator Byer's point on not replacing the local school boards is exactly why I like the idea of sending all the ESD money to the school boards and letting them buy it back from the ESDs. I actually think that's a very good model, but that's not really what we're talking about. But there is an issue. When you represent a district like mine, where you have multiple school districts with fast-growing components, and then you have another school district that's quickly declining, there is a kind of a statewide policy question that comes in. How do you adjust and try to meet the needs of both of those dynamics, if you can? So, I mean, we can say just in the abstract, we're going to send X number of dollars there, but again, there may be some very compelling reasons to do something extraordinary here. And you look over in the Washington County area, where they for years have argued we need additional facilities. and debt service on capital construction. So I think there is, when you get multiple school districts in a major metropolitan area with different dynamics, I think there are some components that we need to try to address if we can. So.
Senator Corcoran.
Well, I want to commend Ozzy, too, for the work that his group did. I really think that it gave us, for one thing, I think it answered the question that Senator Castillo posed earlier, and that is, in a triage situation, who's bleeding the hardest and the worst? And I think it's the small high schools. They recognize that in their methodology and tried to come up with a solution. I think the solution can be tweaked, but I think in essence they did the right thing. The other thing is they addressed the question that Senator Menace and Senator Castillo raised, which is not so much the demographic question of 80, because we do that with ADMW. It's more the question of adequacy of services, and Ozzy proposes in the superintendent's plan to deal with that as well. The one thing that still sticks in my craw, and I just revisited this the other night with a guy who I think is the most passionate guy I've ever known about his particular district and his schools, and that's Terry Thompson, is that he continues to rail on the fact that the fundamental inequity that still exists in school funding is what's considered an offset and what isn't in our deliberations about school funding formula. So he still lives in a world where he thinks Portland's getting, 12,000 a student and Newport's only getting 7,000. And I'm using this example so that it's not self-serving at all because it's not my district. But he makes that argument. He just made it again the other night. And when I lay that on you or on John Marshall, the response I get is that's an apples and oranges comparison. But the fact of the matter is that is out there as a perception. And I think that if there was one helpful thing we could do to kind of sew this up, because I think we're getting to the point of sewing this thing up now. We've got your recommendations after the long debate about, all the options that we might take. And I still, again, I'll advocate for more money in the entire pot, which Senator Castillo advocates for continually, so that we get that $29 million truly as a supplement. But that aside, the one question one answer that would be really helpful to this body as we go out to citizens across the state is, can we look at that issue of what's an offset and what isn't, and what the true volume of dollars coming into the Portland school districts are, for instance, or into Eugene? Use any example. I don't want to pick on Portland. I mean, there's other school districts that are getting other special, that have other federal grants. and so forth coming in. I think that would kind of give us a handle, too, on this, you know, this other equity argument that seems to be out there all the time where the small schools feel like they're getting poked in the eye. But with all that, that's the only real policy question I have still in my mind. The demographics, to me, speak for themselves. Portland's reducing enrollment. Eugene's reducing enrollment. They're going to get less money on an ADMW basis. That's kind of a no-brainer. The identification of the small high schools as being the, you know, the worst in the triage situation is, you know, that's what we asked Ozzie and the superintendents to do, and that's what they brought us back, and I think they did a great job doing that. But that question that I'd still like to get answered out there is still, what's an offset and what isn't?
You know? I think we have the opportunity, Senator, if we accept the recommendations and move forward on a conceptual study of the small school base funding, which is the thing that was recommended there, and within that to consider what are offsets and what are not offsets. Because I think many of the small communities have struggled with that same question.
Yeah.
Now, it's great to have a forest products industry located in a community when timber harvesting happens. But in point of fact, the money that people in the state of Oregon see coming to small local school districts is directly offset by reductions in the general fund when we do the ADM distribution. So it's not any extra money for the schools in rural communities. In fact, every student in Oregon benefits because the ADMW pressure is less. So we really should look at those options. If there are no more questions for Mr. Rose.
Mr. Chair, comment? I'd just like to say thanks for your work on this. I know it was really hard, and it was hard for superintendents. This is very good triage work, Ozzie. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I've been reading this stuff while you guys are talking, and I think it's a typo, but it says something about tithing. Is there an expectation if we send here, it says tithes, do I have?
Where are you?
Abilities I don't know about.
How much you got in your wallet, Rose?
There's a typo there.
Mr. Chairman.
Question or comment?
I just want to henceforth refer to this as the 40 super plan as opposed to Ozzie.
Let me try and characterize what I've heard this morning.
Tithe is spelled voucher.
Voucher.
What I've heard characterized this morning is a relatively careful choice of words as the presentation was made. And I want to focus on that for a second. Mr. Rose indicated that he had tried diligently to avoid the winners and losers concept, but we have heard the concept of triage. Let me paraphrase what I heard Mr. Rose opening his comments with. There will be increases in revenue for most school districts. In point of fact, we have about $650 million in new revenue that's going into this funding formula. And, you know, you can say arguably it's close to $700 million. That is new money, and it's more money. And so the aversion to the word cuts and the aversion to the word reductions makes sense to me because it takes us away from winners and losers. That's a concept that's corrosive in this discussion. We also should recognize that because of roll-up costs and increased energy costs and so forth, that there will be program adjustments in virtually every school district. And that's a reality that I think school districts live with every biennium. There are always adjustments. Let me further clarify that if we accept this recommendation and move it forward, that the small school funding formula that's based on the existence of small districts with small high schools of less than 350 doesn't create an entitlement in that school district. We're putting the money into the district because it's a step toward a flooring or a stabilization for small districts, and they will make the decisions about where that money will go. They not go to the high school. They go to some program that they need to keep funded. But the formula needed to have some compass, and that's the one that was recommended. I agree with members of the committee. I appreciate the diligence. I think people are used to that kind of diligence from Mr. Rose and Mr. Marshall, both. The organizations that they work for and represent well are very diligent in the approach that they take to this process. I am not entirely happy, as I think most of the committee members are not entirely happy with this recommendation. Because what it means is if we accept it, we're saying no to the superintendent of public education who asked us to consider a specific adjustment for the independent education programs. It means that we're saying no to adjusting a glide path for those districts that have had rapidly declining enrollments, where they specifically asked us to extend the ADMW formula to give them a little bit more time for stabilization and recovery. It says no to those rapidly increasing school districts who have asked us to consider some mechanism to allow them to accommodate that growth because it has a pernicious effect on class size and their ability just to function just because of overcrowded facilities. It says no to those districts who have asked us to consider doing something for school-approved event transportation, to add the transportation costs into this formula distribution so that they don't have to make the choice between program and actually transporting students to school-approved events and activities. On the other hand, what this does is it recognizes that among the professionals in the field of education, there is a clear indication that the small school districts do not have the ability and the resiliency that they need to deal with the question of fixed costs and declining enrollment. You know, there's a critical mass that's necessary to keep the school open. It takes a step towards putting a flooring amount under small districts, and that's something that we've struggled with in this process for many sessions. And it does, possibly the best product, is it does give the maximum amount of ADMW allocation to the school district to make decisions with. And perhaps that's the thing that gets at the broadest support from the community members. The mechanism that's been suggested is a $3 million per year distribution on a formulaic basis and a $1.5 million a year distribution with some kind of a grant process as an option. That would create the need for us to also impanel a group and to create a process with a specific time limit so that we can give certainty to the districts that would be affected by this issue. And it also recommends that we create a group to study the concept of small district-based funding. And if we accept Senator Corcoran's discussion about what are offsets, that would be a question we could pose to that group. And the chairman is inclined to request Mr. Rose and Mr. Marshall and Steve of our staff and Mr. Warner and the appropriate legislative council to draft a series of amendments for inclusion in the bill with the right relating clause that would incorporate the recommendations that we've heard this morning. And so I would seek direction from the panel members remaining if that is something that appears to have consensus of the committee. Then I'd ask you not only to allow that process to move forward, support the process when it comes back, but also help to explain this process to your colleagues in your caucuses and in your peer groups, because I think we're going to have to also help explain it to the other chamber, why we've done this and what we've done, and also to school districts and parents and patrons. So if there's consensus on this concept to move it forward, I also hope there's consensus on the willingness to help explain and advocate for the concept and tell people how we arrived here. You know, this is not a default process. This is a process that we've gone through for almost 13 weeks now. Comments?
But, Mr., before we start drafting amendments, I'd actually like to have some time to kind of chew on this a little bit because, I mean, I like it. I like it as a first brush, first attempt, but I think you raised some issues in terms of the component of the small schools plan. I'm not sure that we've got it all in there, and I'd like to make sure that when we do this, that we have the right rationale and the right justification for doing what we're doing, and that it's clearly articulated. And then my other objection is the ESD component. I have some very, very strong feelings about the distribution of ESD monies. I also have some huge concerns about the equalization of ESDs, which, as I said before, is not constitutionally mandated, and its effect in Multnomah County, the Multnomah ESD. I think when you do that with a declining enrollment in the Portland area and you also draw down the ESDs, I think we're setting ourselves up for a huge problems in that inner city area. I think that's a problem. So I'd like to kind of separate out the ESD discussion. So I don't want to see any amendments dealing with that that would codify this plan that was brought.
Yeah, I hope to make this clear for the committee. We have a series of ESD recommendations from Dr. Campbell and that working group, and I think those stand separate from but beside this issue. And I welcome the opportunity to do what the Senator Menendez suggests. Let's consider that separately.
I mean, actually, Mr. Chairman, my proposal, and I'll get it drafted. My proposal is that we pretty much do what has been done in the past with ESDs for this particular biennium in terms of an appropriation, but write in law, compel them to begin to look at, in the next biennium, the distribution of those resources going through the ANMW and get them to start focusing on how they're going to meet those service demands and basically go to their ESDs and arrange for contracts for services and so on and so forth, so that the school boards have an opportunity to review that for a couple of years and decide how they're going to do that.
Senator Menendez, I think your questions speak to service equity and mechanisms for service delivery. I think that is, we've had a lot of discussion in the ESD context in that area, and I think this is a good opportunity for us to ask folks to come back with some real answers in the next section. Comment? No comment? Senator Castillo, any further comments? Senator George, is the chair sensing general consensus to move forward on this project? And Senator Miss, with reference to your request about drafting, I'm going to ask that drafting move forward. I'm going to ask that amendments be prepared. I don't anticipate ESD consideration within this context. But I guess what I'm suggesting is we probably won't see a work product back until Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, and this is the time for us to vet the idea, talk to other people, and get feedback from folks. And so I'd urge you to, all of us essentially, to put the word out that this is going to be the approach we're going to take. But I wouldn't anticipate seeing this before the middle of next week. Senator Kennedy.
Before we can make a decision on this, is the course we're going to take, I think we do need to see a run at this. I also was wondering, was Portland at the table among that group of superintendents that put this together?
Well, let me answer your question. We will have a run. Steve, I'm sure, can take this information. And Steve, do you have a timeline when the committee members and the public could get a run on this? Could we have it by the end of the week, perhaps? Tomorrow. your week is run 7 days from now on to the end of the thing.
I would expect to have something by Monday.
Monday, I think, will be fine for
okay.
The committee's purposes.
Great.
And we got an affirmative answer from Mr. Rose relative to Portland
yeah,
Public
good.
Colleagues, I think the consideration that we've made has been excellent today. The other two bills on the agenda also deal with school funding, so we'll go ahead and just close the work session on Senate Bill 61. The instructions have been made to the committee staff, and let's move forward with scheduling this for when we can bring these funding formula issues back. Senator Menendez, I want you to work with the chair and the staff to make sure your questions get answered before we consider any amendments. Any further business to come forward to the committee? Hearing and seeing none. Work session is closed on Senate Bill 61, and we are in adjournment.